Hi everyone, welcome to Ask the Horse Live. I'm your host, Michelle Anderson, Digital Managing Editor of The Horse. Tonight, we're talking about managing the EMS horse and it's sponsored by Metaboral by Equithrive. Equine metabolic syndrome can cause obesity, insulin resistance, and laminitis. Keeping the EMS horse healthy takes a multifaceted approach that's medical, but also includes nutrition and, in cases of laminitis, podiatry support. With that in mind, we're joined tonight by two experts, Dr. Amanda Adams, who's a researcher at the University of Kentucky's Gluck Center, and Dr. Vernon Dryden, who owns Burr Oak Veterinary and Podiatry Services. Welcome, doctors.
Thank you.
Let's go ahead and start with you, Dr. Adams. You play an interesting role in this disease as a researcher. Can you tell us about your work and interest in EMS?
Yeah, absolutely. But first, I'd like to say good evening to everybody that's joining us. And thanks, Michelle, to you and the horse and Equithrive for putting this event on. I think it's obviously a great and very important topic to be discussing. And so a little bit about my interest in the metabolic syndrome horse in brief. As an immunologist by training, I'm really trying to bring my interest in as a unique angle to the field of research as it relates to metabolic syndrome. And so my goals really are kind of twofold. One, to really better understand some basic questions we have regarding the metabolic syndrome horse, such as how do they respond to vaccination protocols? Do they respond similarly to non-metabolic syndrome horses? Those types of basic questions, but more importantly, asking the question, what role does the immune system and inflammation play in the pathophysiology of metabolic syndrome as it relates to insulin dysregulation and looking at postprandial responses and really the link to these horses developing laminitis. So we still don't have that complete picture. Also interested in further characterizing the diagnostics of metabolic syndrome and management by nutrition of the EMS horse.
Okay. And Dr. Dryden, you have a special interest in podiatry and are a farrier in addition to being a practicing vet. Can you tell us about your experience helping your clients manage EMS horses?
Absolutely. And thank you again to the Horse Magazine and you, Michelle, and Equithrive and their product Metaboral for sponsoring. And hope to have a great evening of good questions. Excited to do this. I have a very, very specific interest in podiatry. I am a certified journeyman farrier. I deal almost exclusively with lameness and podiatry cases. So majority of what I see will be typically laminitic cases, and a lot of them are equine metabolic syndrome cases. So we're finding out widely that this is a syndrome that affects a large populace of horses. And through great research being done by Dr. Adams and people like Dr. Adams, we're able to understand more the pathophysiology of what's going on and to better treat these horses medically, as where before we only had the aftermath of the laminitic episode to deal with. So now we're able to couple what we can do managing the feet along with medical management, dietary management, pasture management, exercise of these horses and get a more responsive patient than we would have in the past. So it's really exciting to me to be able to see these cases go from a very poor condition and a lot of pain to a thriving horse again.
Well, I want to give our audience a quick review of the Ask the Horse Live format in case they haven't joined us before for one of these events. We'll be starting with the questions that everyone submitted during registration. If you have questions that you'd like to ask live or you would like a clarification or have a follow-up question for the doctors, you can enter that on the chat window in front of us if you've joined us on your computer. We're going to do the best, our best to get to as many of your questions as possible during the next hour. And I see questions are already coming in from our live audience. So let's go ahead and get started. Dr. Adams, can you start defining equine metabolic syndrome for us?
Sure. So to keep it simple, when we talk about defining equine metabolic syndrome in brief, this is a clinical syndrome that affects horses, ponies, donkeys, you know, equids. And it's really characterized by three main features. One is general obesity, and we can measure this by using the body conditioning scoring system. So typically, horses affected, or EMS horses are typically a BCS of 7 or greater on a scale of 9. So general obesity. But in this first feature, we can also account for regional adiposity. So looking at accumulation of fat in certain areas, and particularly the neck. So that's really the first main feature defining EMS. The second main feature defining EMS is insulin resistance, or what we now refer to as insulin dysregulation. And so basically these horses either are fasting hyperinsulinemia or have postprandial hyperinsulinemia responses to an oral sugar test, or they are insulin resistant at the tissue level. So kind of in brief, they basically have higher than normal levels of insulin in circulation basally, and also in response to a meal. And then the third defining feature of metabolic syndrome is these horses are predisposed or at heightened risk to developing laminitis.
Okay. So Dr. Adams, is there a human equivalent to equine metabolic syndrome?
Yeah, so very, very similar parallels with metabolic syndrome in humans. Not necessarily diabetes, but metabolic syndrome itself. So general obesity, regional adiposity, and the insulin resistance factor as well. So similar to metabolic syndrome in humans.
Dr. Adams, we have a question from Karen in North Carolina, and she wants to know what the difference is between EMS and Cushing's, and is there a difference in how you feed and treat the two diseases?
Okay, so that's a long-winded question, so I guess bear with me here. So when we're talking about, so let's just talk about first the first part of the question, equine metabolic syndrome versus Cushing's. So let's talk about the who's, the what's, and then the diagnosis, and then we can talk about the management. So when we're talking about equine metabolic syndrome horses, these horses are typically, this is affecting horses that are typically middle-aged horses, so from 6 to 18 years of age. You typically see your easy keeper breeds being affected. So some of your pony breeds, Andalusians, Morgans, Pasifinos, Saddlebreds, Warm Bloods. And again, equine metabolic syndrome, the three defining characteristics, obesity, regional adiposity, insulin dysregulation, predisposition to laminitis. And so when we're talking about equine metabolic syndrome, those are the things that you need to be thinking of when you're picturing that type of horse. Versus when we're talking about equine Cushing's disease, we're talking really about the older horse. So equine Cushing's disease typically affects the senior horse. You know, we're talking about the onset kind of later on in life, around 18 years of age. PPID, we're talking about you know, completely different pathophysiology. These horses have an adenoma of the pituitary. We see delayed hair coat shedding as the classical sign of PPID. We see polydipsia, polyuria, pot-bellied appearance, muscle wasting, lethargy. But these horses can also be predisposed to developing laminitis. And really any breed can be affected by equine Cushing's disease. And so those are really the two, the differences between metabolic syndrome and PPID. And when we're talking about how we feed or manage these animals, whether they're equine metabolic syndrome or PPID, we can really break down the metabolic syndrome horse into being kind of three different categories, actually. So first, let's talk about feeding and managing the metabolic syndrome horse, and then we'll talk about the PPID horse.
Okay.
So three types really of metabolic syndrome horses you need to, you know, when we're considering how we should be nutritionally managing these horses. So we have our typical obese metabolic syndrome horse with a body condition score of 6 to 9. So that's kind of category one. But then we also have the second category, which is the lean metabolic syndrome horse, really kind of a body condition score of sort of 4 to 5. And then we actually have the metabolic syndrome horse that is PPID. So three categories, and we manage them in different ways. And then, of course, we have the PPID horse with or without insulin dysregulation. So let's first talk about feeding and management of that obese, typical phenotype metabolic syndrome horse. So the initial diet, do not feed grain. Avoid grain. We want to avoid pasture if all possible. And then we want to initially manage dietary management of these horses for weight loss initially. So we're going to feed a forage diet at a restricted rate to initially try to help this horse lose weight. So you're looking at feeding 1.5% of body weight of that horse in forage for about 30 days to really try to establish weight loss in that horse. And then you need to reassess body weight within 30 days because we want to do this gradually. And so you really need to monitor that body weight to make sure that we're inducing, you know, a gradual weight loss. And so once you establish that ideal body weight for that horse, then you want to put them on a maintenance diet. Again, no grain, limited or no access to pasture. And then you want to maintain them on, again, an all hay forage diet. And so you may also think about providing that horse with a mineral, vitamin, protein ration balancer to make sure that you're covering all bases and that the diet is balanced since that animal is just receiving a hay diet. So when we talk about feeding hay, we're talking about feeding hay that's low in non-structural carbohydrates. And if you know, it's best to send off a hay sample for analysis to determine what that non-structural carbohydrate percentage is. We like to typically recommend 10 to 12% NSC or below to feed to these equine metabolic syndrome horses. If you don't have access to that, then you can soak the hay for, you know, 60 minutes is really recommended to help lower the sugar content of your hay, soak it in cold water. So once we have that initial weight loss and we're happy, you know, obviously working with a nutritionist and working with your veterinarian, then we want to maintain them on a diet, again, that kind of maintains their weight. And again, at that time, you know, turnout decisions can be based on the diagnostics and where the insulin levels are in that horse. And so really that's kind of what the goals are for that typical obese metabolic syndrome horse. But when we're talking about the lean metabolic syndrome horse, this is the metabolic syndrome horse that is not quite obese, but is still metabolic in terms of having high insulin values or high insulin values in response to feeding when you're diagnostically looking at this animal. So again, you want to maintain them on a low glycemic diet. And you want to pay attention to the non-structural carbohydrates as well. You want to provide low NSC hay to these animals. Again, really, you want to avoid any kind of grains or concentrates, but yet, you know, we're talking about an animal that's a little bit more lean. So it's kind of, you know, a balance of trying to maintain weight on the animal, yet not basically spike the insulin values in that animal. So you could think about providing a low NSC pelleted feed and adding some fat source in the form of, you know, oil or cool cows or a fat source, that you can also add a high quality fiber to increase the calories, such as beet pulp, to that diet as well. And again, think about considering a balancer if needed. And then you have the metabolic syndrome horse that's PPID. And so really you want to follow kind of what we've just said, but with that PPID kind of being another confounding variable, again, these horses can probably be more in the category of that lean metabolic syndrome horse, not always, but you're going to want to follow, again, the low NSC diet, hay forage diet only, restrict grains, pasture, if possible. And so those are really kind of the goals of nutritional management of really the metabolic syndrome horse. And then obviously exercise, if the horse is able to exercise, it's critical in managing these horses. You know, kind of working your way up to a good exercise program. And I think we'll talk about that a little bit more here. And then obviously medical therapy can also help at least with those horses that are resistant to weight loss with nutrition or diet. You know, that's where those would be important in adding to the whole management of these horses.
And go ahead. You mentioned hay soaking, and we have a resource that we've shared in the chat. So if you're listening and you want to know about more about how to safely soak your hay for these EMS horses, go ahead and click on that link, and that takes you to a fact sheet that gives really good instructions on a how-to and what soaking does and what to do with that excess water that comes off the hay when you're feeding your horse soaked hay. Our next question is...
Sorry, I was just going to say just a few quick words about managing nutritionally the PPID horse. You really want to think about managing these horses really as the geriatric of the older horse. And so if they're too thin or too fat, you know, keeping in consideration dental issues, parasitism, really think about just managing these as the older horse. I guess we could probably move on. Sorry, but yeah.
Okay, well, so our next question is for Dr. Dryden, and it's from Bobby in Arizona. And Bobby wants to know what the simplest way is to diagnose EMS.
All right. Well, hi, Bobby in Arizona. That's my home state. So it's nice to hear from somebody in Arizona. Simplest way to diagnose is a simple blood test. We just pull a sample of blood after the horse has been fasted. So typically what I tell my clients to do is feed the horse as you normally would, give them, you know, their last feeding at least by 9 to 10 p.m. So they get 8 to 6 hours at least of fasting time. Do the blood draw first thing in the morning before they have anything to eat. And then look at the blood glucose and insulin ratio. In a insulin resistant horse, a metabolic type horse, you're going to see a normal glucose level with an elevated insulin level. If you have a horse that has an elevated glucose level in conjunction with an elevated insulin level, that may indicate you need to test for PPID or Cushing's as a backup, because that was one of the reasons why Dr. Adams did such a good job explaining, because these horses can have both disease processes occurring at the same time. So it gets a little bit overlapped when you talk about diagnosing.
We have a question from our live audience. It's a follow-up for you, Dr. Adams, and it's from Cindy. And Cindy wants to know if it helps to feed only small amounts of a high-quality senior feed several times a day to decrease the chance of insulin spikes in a horse.
So, good question. Unfortunately, these, you know, concentrated feeds are going to have, you know, probably more sugar than needed for the metabolic syndrome horse. So it's really best to try to keep these metabolic syndrome horses on a forage only diet. So I would think about switching over to hay pellets if you don't have, or hay cubes. If you want to feed more intermittently throughout the day, or putting your hay source in a feed bag or a slow feeder so that it allows them access to this hay throughout the day, but really need to avoid concentrates and grains in these horses if they are metabolic syndrome horses.
So, Dr. Adams, I know I've been in the feed store and I've been looking at the different feeds they have on the wall with the nutrition cards, and there's a lot of low-carb feeds on the market now. Is a low-carb feed something that would be an option for an EMS horse, or should a horse owner, before they pick any whatever brand is available in low-carb, should they talk to a nutritionist and figure out the best way to feed their horse?
I think it depends on, you know, what access of hay that they have. But yeah, I think it's a great idea. You know, all of these feed companies are very proactive about helping owners manage these metabolic syndrome horses. You know, again, ideally you would be feeding a forage only a diet in terms of hay or hay pellets. But these low carb feeds essentially are higher in forage as well. So yeah, if you can't just feed all forage, then consider these low carbohydrate diets. But if you just kind of, you know, I know have very friends and even have been prone myself to want to, you know, we want to give our horse something, you know, and if you're, you really want to feel that you have to give them something, or I would think about a balancer pellet as being a good alternative as well, as to be able to give them something in terms of a pellet or a feed source, which could be an option, yeah. Giving a balancer pellet.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Adams brings up a really good point. And for a majority of my clients, when they ask, well, how do I get them their medication? They're not going, yeah, to just eat it. So most of the time I say, just give them a handful of a balanced ration, you know, balancer, right, like M30 or something. And that works great. The horses feel like they're getting something when their buddies are getting something to eat, and they get, right, their meds down and everything. Everything works well. If they won't take their meds, I like to use sugar-free applesauce in a doser syringe, and that works really well too.
Yeah. And there's still a lot of ongoing research. In fact, my team is working on this now, is to actually ask the question, just by giving metabolic syndrome horses balancer pellets, this low carb feeds, hay pellets, hay, concentrates, sweet feed, you name it, and ask what kind of insulin response that we see post giving these different types of feeds, because just not a lot of research out there in providing really strong data behind all these different products and what they're doing in terms of insulin responses. But a lot of work to be done.
Yeah. So we have a related follow-up question from our live audience, Dr. Adams. And Betsy wants to know if there's a certain type of hay that you would recommend. Is it coastal Bermuda, alfalfa? What would be the recommended forage for an EMS horse?
Yeah, so I think first of all, you know, getting your hay tested, whatever hay source that you have in your area, because obviously not all states are going to have your cool season grasses or your warm season grasses. But look at that, you know, you need to look at the non-structural carbohydrate content of the hay sources that you have and make the best decision off of that. So you can send a sample of your hay off to Dairy One and they'll provide you with that information. But your warmer season grasses are typically lower in non-structural carbohydrates. But again, not everybody has access to those Bermuda grasses. And so it just depends really on your location. But Timothy, typically, you know, your Timothys are going to have your, you know, medium or lower sugar in those grasses versus your orchard grasses or your cool season grasses like orchard or fescue. They're going to tend to have a little bit higher sugar content than your warm season grasses such as Bermuda or Timothy.
Dr. Dryden, we have a follow-up question about insulin levels from Gina in our live audience. She says, when you say high insulin, how high of a insulin value would be considered at risk for laminitis or equine metabolic syndrome?
Well, I don't know that we particularly have a threshold for in basically producing a laminitic situation. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Adams, but we do know that above 20 micro units per milliliter, you're looking at an abnormal insulin level in the face of a fasted state and normal glucose. So anything above 20, I would be concerned about. Now, I have had a case in which it was a pony and her insulin levels were 600. And she was in fact laminitic, but that's off the charts. So they can get up to that level, but anything above 20, and typically we'll see horses that are in a laminitic state. In my experience, and as a clinician, I see a lot of horses that are in a laminitic state that are around 60 to 80 when we test the insulin.
Yeah, we don't have that like number one, you know, bullet number. This is the number of insulin in terms of microunits per mil is going to guarantee that horse is going to develop laminitis. We don't have that number. So Dr. Dryden's right when he's talking about the different ranges and the cutoffs that we do have. Those are definitely correct.
We have another follow-up question from the live audience for Dr. Adams. It's from Kristen, and she wants to know if there's a genetic predisposition for certain breeds or lines to develop EMS.
Yeah, so we definitely think that, pretty sure that genetics plays a role given the fact that some of these breeds are more susceptible or at a higher risk of equine metabolic syndrome. And so we have not identified, you know, the exact gene or genes involved in this, but there are groups. The University of Minnesota is working on this and trying to understand that, you know, it's complex. We've got genetics, but then we also have environment influencing these responses as well. But no, and it's not going to probably be just one gene. It'll probably be a family of genes, you know, that is responsible for metabolic syndrome.
Okay. Dr. Dryden, we have a question from Roberta in California, and she wants to know if you have any treatment recommendations for a miniature horse with EMS-associated laminitis. Would your recommendations be different for that of a full-size horse?
Only in dosing, really, is what it amounts to. You treat these the same for a miniature versus an adult normal-size horse. And so, again, this is a very, very complex topic, and I'll try to be brief as I can. We could spend several days talking about this, but if we have a known metabolic syndrome horse, obviously you're treating that horse for insulin resistance, most likely, and watching their diet, reducing non-structural carbohydrates. If they're having an acute episode, we're going to be placing them on a non-steroidal. On a miniature, I would probably think that a low dose of Banamine and/or Fibrocoxib Equiox would be a good choice for that. And then one of the things that we do routinely is cryotherapy or ice boots on these guys in the early stages. In the pre-acute and acute stages, we found that it can be very helpful. Continuous icing for up to 72 hours is very helpful, reducing the detrimental effects of the laminitic episode. And I think what's important for people to understand is that laminitis, it's not something that just occurs once and then it's done. If a horse has laminitis, most likely they're going to be susceptible to having that again at some point in their life, and we have to be very careful, and it's going to be a management issue for the rest of their life, especially if they're a metabolic syndrome horse or a Cushing's horse. But laminitis is inflammation of the lamina, okay? And what happens in all these little small finger-like projections are called lamina, and they interlock like if you were to put your fingers together and interlock your fingers. When they become inflamed, they spread and they get swollen, and that initiates a pain cycle in itself. And also when they get swollen, they disattach, and the weight of the horse in conjunction with the deep flexor tendon pulling on the coffin bone may cause displacement of the pedal bone within the capsule. So, and when that happens, then we have a true founder situation. So the coffin bone is actually displaced within the capsule. And at that point, you know, there's a strong need for therapeutic therapy and therapeutic shoes to help with managing these cases. So a lot of horses go through laminitic episodes and don't have rotation and don't have displacement. So that's important to understand that a horse can have a laminitic episode and not necessarily become foundered and rotated or sink. So that's an important aspect of it to understand. But as far as treating them differently than a regular horse, I would say no. It's just, you know, on the size variable is where it's different.
Dr. Dryden, with an EMS horse, let's say the horse has been diagnosed with having the disease and the owner is managing that horse at a healthy body score condition. Is it still possible for that horse to get laminitis even though it isn't overweight?
Absolutely, it is. Mm-hmm. And that's a difficult concept that it's hard to relay to clients because they see their horse is happy, it's at a good weight, and then they're so eager to let the horse out on a lush green pasture. But what you have to understand is that this horse, nothing's changed for him in his metabolic state, and his endocrine system is the same. We're just managing it better. So if you go allow them to purge on a high content of non-structural carbohydrates and they get a spike in insulin and they're not able to respond as they should, that can send them off into a laminitic episode. So even though they may be managing it very well and the horse is comfortable, sound, and at a good weight, it's still an issue that they have to contend with for the remainder of their being.
So Dr. Adams, I know you're there in Lexington in the beautiful bluegrass, and I am in the high desert of Oregon, where if you don't have irrigation, you don't have pasture. Are we as likely in the high desert area to have equine metabolic syndrome horses as you are in such a beautiful place? Like when I go to Lexington, because that's where the horse is based, right. I'm so jealous of the pastures. If my horses knew that pastures like that existed, they would run away from home. So
right.
They'd say, and that's a good Kentucky.
Right. I think it's a really good question. You know, we don't have a lot of epidemiological data to tell us, you know, how many horses are affected by metabolic syndrome and then based on location. So while we have, yes, very lush pastures here and you not so lush, I think too, one can overfeed and overmanage and can tip that predisposed horse into becoming metabolic syndrome. So I think they probably do exist out there, but may not be necessarily because of your lush pasture.
We have a question from our live audience, Dr. Adams. It's from Kristen, and she wants to know if you board a horse and what should you do if you board a horse and do not have access to a dry lot? And that's, again, just a regional difference. Like where I am, you're fortunate to have access to a pasture if you board. So
Right. What
do you do if you don't have control over those management situations with your horse?
Right. So if you don't have access to a dry lot, you know, depending on how severe, definitely get an indication of where your insulin values are on that horse. You know, if they are well and above 20 insulin value, you really should not think about muzzling the horse and putting them out on pasture, you know, until you can get the insulin under control. Now, if you're not talking about a real severe high level insulin, you could think about muzzling the horse, putting a grazing muzzle on the horse and allowing access to pasture that way. But again, I think it all comes down to where the insulin values are on that horse. I mean, I can't, you know, I guess shout loud enough that I think diagnosis and following these horses, you know, as often as you can in terms of looking at their insulin values is so critical in helping you make decisions on management of these horses. So grazing muzzles, you know, turn out when it's sort of quote unquote safe, where the sugars are lowest in pasture. So basically you could think about sugars being highest during the day, because that's when photosynthesis is occurring. So sugars tend to be low at night into the early morning hours. So you could think about grazing sort of your horse when it's safe, even with a grazing muzzle, and then restricting, you know, stall restriction, you know, and make sure your horse is getting plenty of exercise with hand walking and all. But yeah, that's a tough situation.
Yeah. Dr. Dryden.
Hey, Dr. Adams, I have one quick question for Dr. Adams. How often would you recommend the clients test insulin levels and glucose?
Oh, I mean, as often as possible. No. You know, I think at least twice a year, spring and fall, or even before spring and fall, because spring and fall are our most difficult times of the year to manage these horses. So knowing what the insulin values are before going into those two different seasons would be great to have. And then maybe, you know, if you can have a look, you know, outside of those two periods, great. I think you can't probably overlook or, you know, overdo it there. I think that just gives so much guidance in management of these animals.
I like to have my clients do it at least quarterly. And if we've had an episode, I do it every 2 weeks to kind of help manage my my medical management of the case.
Sure.
So that's kind of like a good guideline I tell my clients for.
Absolutely.
Dr. Dryden, we have a question from our live audience for you. Rachel wants to know if you have any recommendations on shoes versus barefoot for EMS horses. Is there any special trim that you would recommend for an EMS horse?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And typically, unless the horse has got displacement of the coffin bone, I don't shoe them. Unless I need the added mechanics of the shoe to enable, you know, me to take tension off the deep flexor and help reposition things, then I'll go to some sort of therapeutic shoeing application. If they've just become laminitic, what I really actually like to do is place them in a boot, like a cloud boot or a soft ride boot, something like that. And be able to ice them and treat the foot like that until they stabilize. And then an important aspect of it is I manage my cases through digital radiography, which is a wonderful tool to have. But it's really, really necessary in order to see whether or not these horses have displaced, rotated, or sunk in some direction so that you can manage the case appropriately. But if they have not displaced them, they've just gone through a laminitic episode and they're now stable, I like to leave them barefoot because less is more, in my opinion. So I hope that answers your question. And as far as any particular shoes, I'm not married to any particular shoe. I do whatever, you know, the horse needs in their particular, every foot is an individual and you have to treat it as such.
We have a question from our live audience. Gina wants to know about her horse who had been on soaked hay for 8 to 9 years after having an EMS-related laminitis. He's now having another episode after being well-managed for that period of time. Is there anything else she could do to help manage him, and would any medications help? Dr. Adams?
I guess I would question, you know, what has changed. You know, I mean, the management sounded like it was wonderful for 8 or 9 years, you know, in terms of, you know, maybe kind of trace backwards on what has changed. Maybe you've changed sources of hay, you know, maybe you think that you're feeding that same old, you know, orchard fescue, whatever, Timothy, but the, you know, non-structural carbohydrate levels have changed. You know, have you changed the exercise regimen of this animal? If the animal has been able to exercise, think about considering increasing the exercise, because exercise actually improves insulin sensitivity. So the more exercise you can do with these animals, while obviously they're not undergoing a laminitic bout, that could actually help along with, you know, the dietary restriction that we've been talking about. Exercise is so important, and I think we tend to forget about it. But in terms of medical therapy, I might let Dr. Dryden step in there. But I think, you know, if the animal is resistant to, you know, dietary management as well as exercise, then yeah, medical therapy should be considered, but with close monitoring and prescribing by a veterinarian for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the first things that needs to happen is get a blood glucose and insulin ratio test done. Yeah. See where your insulin levels are, because in my experience, the insulin levels are directly correlated to laminitic responses. And as soon as you get those insulin levels down, it seems as though your laminitic state comes to a halt and you can manage them. One of the treatments that we do when they are extremely elevated is a drug. It's a human diabetes type 2 medication called metformin. And we give this at a dose of 30 mg per kg twice a day. I like to give it for probably about 4 weeks and then start tapering down by half dose. Because they will build up a bit of a resistance to it. And I'm also managing them through repeated insulin tests to see where we're at and managing it.
Yeah.
The other thing that I have added to my mix in the last couple years is Metaborol, the Equithrive product Metaborol, whose active ingredient is resveratrol. On that pony that I talked about that had the insulin level of 600, we were able to get the insulin level down to a normal range through help with metformin and diet and exercise. And then we were able to actually manage that pony on the Metaborol. And the one time they went off the Metaborol, they had a bit of a change in the barn, went off the Metaborol, she had another episode and the insulin spike. So I think that, you know, maintaining the medications and finding out what works is critical.
We have a question from Betsy from Kayla in our live audience for you, Dr. Adams. She says she has a 36-year-old horse that has no teeth. She can't eat long-stemmed forage. Is a diet of soaked hay cubes and beet pulp with a ration adequate?
So 36-year-old horse, is that what you said?
36 years old, yep.
Yeah, wow. I commend you on that long life span there. That's great. So you would want to definitely take a look at, you know, reevaluate the body condition score of a 36-year-old horse. Typically, we don't see these long-lived, you know, out past 30 years of age being obese, but not to say that it can't happen. So one might consider looking at the body condition score in all of this horse, and also taking a look at the insulin levels of this horse to help guide you with really what diet would be most are best suited for this horse. So if the insulin values are normal in your horse, which if I had to guess, they probably would be, then I would say that an equine senior complete feed would be more appropriate if the insulin values are normal in this horse. That's what these diets were designed for, these equine senior feeds. They're complete feeds. They were designed to be fed to the senior horse that had dental issues that could no longer handle hay and forage and in hay, long stem hay. So you can feed them, you know, basically these equine senior diets at 100% to provide all of the nutrients that the horse needs. So yeah, I definitely need to kind of though look at the insulin values of the animal before you decide whether a complete feed is good or not.
So Dr. Adams, that complete feed would be in contrast to like a concentrate that you feed a performance animal that doesn't have equine metabolic syndrome, correct?
Right.
So we have a question, Dr. Adams, from Kathleen in Illinois. And Kathleen wants to know if there's any signs beside weight gain that could indicate that your horse is at risk for EMS.
So I think, you know, a few things to keep in mind is definitely the breed of your horse. So if your breed is sort of listed in that category as being at higher risk, you know, definitely probably need to keep equine metabolic syndrome on your radar. Along with the weight gain. So, you know, if you have a Morgan or a Pasofino or a Saddlebred, Warm Blood, you know, really keep a close watch on these horses for sure. Also paying attention to the regional adiposity. So not just general obesity, but is my horse getting a cresty neck? Is it getting fat pads above the tail head? You know, paying attention to those signs as well. But then also, again, coming back to the diagnostics, taking a blood sample, looking at resting insulin levels in that horse, and then also think about having your veterinarian perform a dynamic test, such as the oral sugar test, especially if we're talking about picking up an early stage metabolic syndrome horse. We like to push forward that the oral sugar test be looked at. So this is basically looking at the insulin response to basically giving a bolus of sugar to your horse to guide whether or not this is a metabolic syndrome horse or not.
Dr. Dryden, we have a question from our live audience. Jane wants to know if a horse can be tested during a pre-purchase exam to judge the possibility of the horse having in the future or currently having EMS.
Absolutely. Yeah, no. And actually, I've been asked to do that before. So it's not out of line to ask for a blood sample during a pre-purchase exam. And you can test for insulin, glucose ratios, ACTH, and that is perfectly acceptable. Yes.
We have a question from Di in Australia for you, Dr. Adams. She's listening live, and she wants to know if there are any other possible acute triggers for EMS, such as infection, that could spike insulin levels in a horse that maybe had a history of laminitis.
So triggers for equine metabolic syndrome itself, not necessarily. I think perhaps one could think of other trigger factors for laminitis, such as sepsis, but that's not necessarily going to be the same trigger factor for metabolic syndrome. Dr. Dryden, do you want to comment on other trigger factors for laminitis?
I do. And, you know, what I see a lot that goes hand in hand with our metabolic horses are the fat hunter show ponies that go around on some sort of medication like Depo-Provera, or go have coffin joints and stifles and injected with corticosteroids. With these horses are at a threshold already existing at a metabolic stress metabolic state, and then we go and add more circulating corticosteroids, it sets them over the edge. And I treat more laminitic horses that have had corticosteroid injections than I care to admit. So I think that is something that in a horse that you know is metabolic or that type of horse, it's very, 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 I'd be very cautious of coffin joint injections or any injections really with a large amount of corticosteroid. And it seems as though the corticosteroid that I have seen the most problems with is triamcinolone, and I think it's because it's a very a short-acting steroid.
We have another question from our live audience. This is for Dr. Adams. It's from Tammy, and Tammy wants to know if feeding soaked soy hulls along with hay is okay for the EMS horse.
Soaked soy hulls is a good source, like beet pulp, of fiber to give. So yeah, I would think that would be just fine to give as an additional source of fiber to these horses, along with hay. Yes.
We had another question come in from our live audience regarding supplements for EMS horses. Let's start with Dr. Adams. You want to touch on some of the different supplements that might be available for horses? During registration, we got a lot of questions about chasteberry and different things to give our horses. Is there anything
right.
that might help?
Yeah, so supplements is, you know, there's a whole catalog out there of supplements we can give our horses. I think we have to be careful in which ones we select based on the research behind them. And unfortunately, because research is costly, there's not a lot of research behind, you know, a lot of these different supplements that are being advertised to help improve insulin sensitivity of the horse. Chasteberry, not that I'm aware of, having any research behind it and showing improving insulin sensitivity in horses, although it does, in humans, it's actually kind of more, it would be more suited for a therapy for the Cushingoid horse because of how chasteberry works biologically, but maybe not so much for the metabolic syndrome horse. But again, no research behind chasteberry that I'm aware of. And the metaborol actually is a supplement that actually I conducted the research behind the metaborol product. It's actually resveratrol, as Dr. Dryden said, is the active component. It was an idea that I had based off of human trials looking at the effects of resveratrol on insulin signaling and sensitivity and metabolism in humans, and it's actually a really cool polyphenol that actually it's a compound that sort of mimics what happens in our cells as we undergo exercise or dietary restriction. So the same pathways are upregulated or downregulated. That's what resveratrol has been shown to do. It mimics these pathways that are protective. And so anyways, I had the idea and submitted it as a grant. It was awarded by EQAJ. And so we looked at, and I reached out to Equithrive. Dr. Lawless was really gracious in helping provide the resveratrol for this study. And we gave it to metabolic syndrome horses and some horses. So some got the resveratrol and then we had the other group of horses that received the placebo and actually showed that after 45 days, of giving this resveratrol to these horses, we did see some improvements in their insulin responses, and we saw some reduction in inflammation, and we saw some reductions, I think, believe in triglycerides, maybe, and leptin. But again, I think you have to pay attention to the supplements out there and make sure there's been research behind them. And if there hasn't, you know, we just don't know those answers. I know that we're just recently kind of wrapping up a couple of studies looking at the effects of omega fatty acids and prebiotics on insulin responses and metabolic syndrome horses. There has been one study that has been published looking at fructooligosaccharides or prebiotics, and had out of that study, there was some improvements in insulin responses of these horses. So again, I think you just got to be cautious of the supplements on the market without research behind them.
Okay. We have a question for Dr. Dryden. It's from Jesse in Minnesota. And Jesse wants to know, with the reduced intake of feed, how do you ensure your EMS horse is getting the minerals and vitamins that it needs?
So in most cases, forage is going to provide the minerals and vitamins that you need, unless you're in a very I guess, restricted area that may be lacking. However, one of the easiest ways is just feed a rationer, a balanced rationer for your horse, and make sure that they have a mineral block, and that will usually take care of it. Dr. Adams, do you have any other comments other than that?
No, you've covered it. Provide a salt mineral block if you don't have access to balancer pellet, but most of the feed companies nowadays will sell a ration balancer, and you feed about a pound, so it's just basically a handful, really a little over a handful or a cup of this per day to your horse, and to ensure that they have a balanced diet, being on an all forage hay diet.
I just moved my horse to a ration balancer. He's very sad about getting a cup of it.
Yeah.
He finishes before everyone else and is like, hey. So.
Right.
So we have another question from Dale in Illinois, Dr. Adams. And Dale wants to know about exercise and blood sugar. How does exercise help lower blood sugar levels?
So actually, exercise, like I said earlier, actually improves the insulin sensitivity of the tissues. So it actually helps the cells insulin signaling happen the way it should. So when insulin binds to the insulin receptor, the cells are able to uptake glucose, and thereby you kind of reduce circulating levels of glucose. And so exercise does a good job at doing that. We don't really have an exact regimen, like I said, for how much exercise you have to basically induce in the metabolic syndrome horse to drop insulin. But, 20 to 30 minutes of riding, lunging 2 to 3 times per week with a gradual increase to, 5 times per week would probably be ideal. It'd be a good goal.
We have a question from Katie in Maryland, and this is for Dr. Dryden. Katie wants to know if you should be concerned about EMS horses also having ulcers. Is that a concern that goes along with EMS?
I think in a sense of a stress level, horses that are typically stressed can manifest ulcers. And if they're in pain, a lot of horses that are chronically laminitic are in a lot of pain over an extended period of time and become stressed and do get ulcers. So in that sense, yes, I don't know that there's a direct correlation between EMS itself and developing ulcers. I guess I'd bounce that over to Dr. Adams if she's aware of any direct correlation other than pain and stress.
No, not at all. But two, when we think about restricting diet, depending on how you're doing that, that is definitely another potential trigger factor for potential ulcers. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask the next question, but I didn't mean to interrupt. So.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. We have a question from Donna in our live audience, and she wants to see if you could address feeding alfalfa, which is reported to have lower carbohydrate amounts. Dr. Adams?
Yeah, so alfalfa has a pretty comparable, non-structural carbohydrate as such as your Timothy Hayes, but it can have, there's a pretty big range of NSC for alfalfa. So you can't just say, alfalfa is safe because it has supposed to have lower NSC. But it also is higher in protein. And so we are starting to investigate actually what effects are there of feeding higher protein levels to metabolic syndrome horses? Because we know that in humans, feeding high protein, you can induce an insulinemic response. So I don't think we have a complete answer yet, but, in terms of the NSC, alfalfa is decent, but I don't think we have a complete picture in terms of, because alfalfa is higher in protein, we don't exactly know what feeding that higher protein is doing to the insulin responses in these animals.
We have a question that was submitted during registration. It's from Curtis in California. And Curtis wanted to know if EMS can be completely eliminated or reversed with proper management. Dr. Adams, you want to tackle that one?
Right. So I think we can obviously, you know, with a lot of help with diet and maybe medical therapy, you know, we can induce weight loss in these horses. We can reduce, thereby reducing insulin in these horses, but that doesn't mean that necessarily that metabolic syndrome is going to go away. And that Dr. Dryden touched on earlier, that you can then just turn these horses out into a lush field and think that they're going to be okay. Not the case. You know, unfortunately, this is a lifelong management situation with strict management of these horses, maintaining them, you know, once you get them at a good body condition score, maintaining them at that body condition score, and then monitoring the insulin, you know, at least once or twice a year would be ideal, because you're really not going to eliminate it. You might reverse some of the effects by reducing insulin and body weight, but to say that that horse is never going to, you know, be predisposed to laminitis again, just, you know, turn them out, close your eyes, I wouldn't do that.
Okay. So before we finish up tonight, I want to let everyone know that we've posted a resource. It's 10 editor's picks for articles and content related to EMS on thehorse.com. So if you go to thehorse.com/EMS resources, you'll find our top 10 editor's picks on the topic. Before we close, I wanted to ask each of you what the one most important takeaway you'd like people to have from tonight's discussion. Dr. Dryden, let's start with you.
Management, management, management. That's it. You got to... Okay. Understand what your horse needs, and it's a lifelong management scenario, and that it's not just a one time, one and done, okay, he's fixed. It's a lifelong management partnership with your horse.
To follow up on that, it's really to consider it a team effort in managing, you know, work with your veterinarian, work with your nutritionist, work with your farrier. You know, it's really a team management effort, and you can't, you know, follow these horses in terms of looking and monitoring their insulin over, you know, over the year to just really help you with that management of that horse. So.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for tonight. I want to thank Dr. Adams and Dr. Dryden for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Enjoyed it.
Thank you very much for having us.
I also want to thank our sponsor, Metaboral, for bringing this event to you for free. If you want to listen again, we'll be posting it by tomorrow morning on thehorse.com, and you can listen to it again if you want to follow up on any of the great information that the doctor shared. I also finally want to thank everyone who submitted questions and listened live. Please join us next month when we discuss sunburn and sun sensitivity in horses. Summer's coming. Until then, from all of us at The Horse, have a great night.